Good afternoon. Could I get your attention, please? Thank you. Thank you. We've got to get through a quick list of incredible people. So I appreciate your attention. And our sponsors, we had so many sponsors, it went on to a second page, so I missed a few of them. So I want to make sure we acknowledge the U of I system, University of Illinois system, Ardmore Roderick, and the Mid-America Carpenters. Where's Kevin and their crew? Thank you. And, of course, MPEA and Loretta Clark. So thank you to those sponsors. I think that's all that I have. And as always, we have a host of elected officials here. So I'm going to mention those folks, at least that I'm aware of. Let's start with Madam President Tony Preckwinkle, Cook County Board President. Thank you for always being here and being supportive. And if you don't mind, I'll go through this list relatively quickly, and please hold your applause so we can get through it. Supreme Court Justice Joy Cunningham is here. Marianne Spiropoulos, the President Spiropoulos is here. Alderman Felix Cardonia, Alderman Stephanie Coleman, Alderman Derek Curtis, Commissioner Randy Connor, not elected, but he is a City Club speaker and a cabinet member. I mentioned Alderman Derek Curtis, MWRD Vice President Teresa Flynn, Mayor Rory Hoskins, Senator Kimberly Lightford, Alderman Ray Lopez, Alderman Gil Villegas. That's it. No other electeds. I didn't miss anyone, right? I was just seeing if everyone's paying attention. We have a whole host of representatives. Apparently some people are paying attention. Okay, stick with me here, because we have a whole list here of state representatives surprisingly showing up for the speaker. A former elected, Jackie's pointed out, Alderman Latasha Thomas, thank you for being here. And, of course, John Cullerton, the former president of the Senate. I see you right next to her. Okay. I'm going to save you all some time by not saying representative for each one of these. These are all very honorable state representatives. Dee Avalar, Mary Beth Canty, Kelly Cassidy, Kim DuBoucle, LaShawn Ford, Robin Gable, Edgar Gonzalez Jr., Jay Hoffman, Lindsay LaPointe, Therese Ma, Bob Morgan, Bob Rita, Nick Smith, Curtis Tarver, and Maurice West. Did I miss any? Because I very well may have. Ann Williams. Thank you. Oh, Eva Dina Delgado, who's speaking tomorrow. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for your service to all these state representatives and all our elected officials. I think we have a quorum. And, of course, I mentioned some business leaders. We have some other City Club speakers, Mike Atkinson, Dr. Atkinson from Brookfield Zoo, Kirk Dillard from the RTA, Marilyn Gardner from Navy Pier, Clayton Harris from the Speaker's Office, CTA President Nora Learson, who's going to be speaking on the 22nd, Kevin McLaughlin, as I mentioned, from the Carpenters Union. Dr. Zhang is here from the Deputy Consul General from China. Thank you. I mentioned Loretta, Tom Cross, thank you, Kara Bachman from the Sports Commission, and of course Kristen Reynolds, who's also coming up, speaking here in January. Amazing group of people, Aaron Ailman, Christy George, Illinois Economic Development Corp., Nick Jones from the U of I system, Mike Mizakowski from Hope Academy. So many amazing people. This is what City Club is. So I'll keep going, but I won't. I'll spare you that, because we have an amazing speaker. So thank you to all of you for showing up, for being here, and for being part of this incredible institution. We are always excited to welcome Speaker Welch when he comes to the City Club for so many reasons, and here are a couple of them. He insists on getting here earlier than myself, by the way, and greeting everyone on the way in. That's pretty neat. Note to future speakers. Very much appreciated. He is a man who appreciates the people that he serves and who elected him. He also is an inspiring speaker, and I would encourage you, after you hear him today, maybe go back to a couple of the other speeches he's given here at City Club. They're pretty impressive. So it's always, you always get something incredible, and he never holds back from answering any questions. So we're very much looking forward to a host of questions after he does give some remarks. But we really are excited to have him as the first speaker of 2026 here at the City Club. He was first elected to the 7th District in 2012 and has helped guide the state through so many different historic fiscal challenges, major criminal justice reform, all during so many moments of uncertainty, in leading one of the most, you know, diverse legislative caucuses in the country. So I hope you all will join me here in welcoming back to City Club Speaker of the Illinois House of Representatives, Chris Welch.
Wow. Thank you all. Thank you, Dan. Wow, look at this crowd. I don't think there's any space left. It is truly, truly an honor to be here at the City Club of Chicago. Thank you for hosting us today, Omar, Dan, and for being one of the most important civic institutions in our city and our state. You guys do a remarkable job. Can we give them a round of applause, please? You know, the City Club really has been it has been a place where big ideas are tested, where leaders are challenged, and where democracy is taken seriously. Not as a slogan, but as a responsibility. I am truly honored to be here, and I'm humbled by the extraordinary interest in today's conversation. People have been calling for weeks saying, how do I get in? How do I get in? I'm told by Dan that the waiting list to attend today's luncheon is the second longest in the City Club history. Second only, there's this guy named Donald Trump. He spoke here a few years ago, and I guess he still has the longest. Is that right, Dan? According to him? You know, I like that. But let me tell you, that fact alone tells us something very important. It really does. It tells us that this moment that we're in right now really does matter. It tells us that democracy matters. And it tells us that people are hungry, not for chaos or spectacle, but for clarity, for truth, and for real leadership. Because today is not just another date on the calendar, as some people would like it to be. It's not just another day anymore. Today is January 6th. 5 years ago, on this very day, our nation watched in disbelief as a violent mob, incited by a sitting United States president, stormed the United States Capitol in an effort to overturn a free and fair election. They attacked police officers. They desecrated the halls of the United States Congress. They threatened elected officials. They carried guns into the Capitol. They carried bear spray into the Capitol. They had zip ties with them. And they sought to apprehend and perhaps even execute the Vice President of the United States because he refused to abuse his office. And they attempted to stop the peaceful transfer of power for the first time in American history. January 6, 2021 was not just a riot. Media, please stop reporting it as a riot. It was not just a protest that got out of hand. It was an insurrection against democracy itself. And let me repeat that. It was an insurrection against democracy itself. And 5 years later, we are still living with its consequences. So today, in this room, Madam President Breckwinkle, in this city, Justice Cunningham, at this moment in history, we must ask ourselves a very serious question. What are we going to do about it? What are we all going to do about it? This room full of influential leaders. Let me make a suggestion, and it'll be my point for today, that we all play an infinite game to preserve democracy. We all must play an infinite game to preserve democracy. Because preserving our democracy is not a one-day event. It's not a single election. It's more than this midterm that's coming up. It is not the responsibility of one party or one generation. Preserving democracy is what Simon Sinek calls an infinite game. Those folks over there are chuckling a little bit because they hear me talk about it all the time. I go back to it time and time again. In this book, The Infinite Game, Sinek explains that there are two types of games in life. Finite games have known players, fixed rules, and a clear endpoint. At the end of a finite game, there is a winner and a loser. Everyone is going to be tuned in Saturday night at 7 o'clock for a finite game between the Bears and the Packers. And we hope at the end of that finite game, the Bears are the winners. Some of y'all might be quietly rooting for that other team. But our finite mindset said the Bears are going to win on Saturday night. But infinite games are very different than what we're going to see Saturday night. They have changing players. The rules evolve, and the goal is not to win, but to keep playing in perpetuity, to go on and on and on. Ladies and gentlemen, democracy is the ultimate infinite game. I couldn't be here today on January 6th and not talk about the ultimate infinite game. There is no finish line. There is no final victory. There is only the ongoing work of preserving, strengthening, and renewing it generation after generation. January 6th happened because too many people, especially those in positions of power, particularly one person in particular in power, decided to treat democracy like a finite game. They believed that if they lost, the game was over. They believed that power was something to be seized, not stewarded. They believed that the rules only mattered when they were winning. And when that thinking takes hold, everyone, when that thinking takes hold, democracy's in danger. When that thinking takes hold, we're in trouble. Because democracy cannot survive if we only believe in it when it benefits us. The truth is this. Democracy has always been fragile. Always. And we always have to fight for it. It survived the Civil War. It survived the Great Depression. It survived world wars, political assassinations, and social upheaval. And let's remember this about January 6th, 5 years ago. When the smoke cleared and peace was restored to the Capitol that day, the vast majority of the leaders in that building, including Donald Trump's own vice president, sided with democracy. And they should be commended for playing the infinite game. Additionally, when President Trump won election in 2024, we were reminded what a peaceful transition of power looked like and what an infinite game mindset should look like. But that choice between democracy and tyranny, between the rule of law and the whims of a strong man, is a choice we need to make every single day. And more, what we're seeing is that it is a choice many leaders would turn away from rather than face head on. That's not leadership. Democracy only survives because of ordinary people. Public servants, activists, voters, and yes, elected officials. We have to choose to keep playing an infinite game. And on January 6th, a lot of them did that, including Vice President Pence. They chose country over party. They chose principle over power. They chose democracy over demagoguery. And now, 5 years later, here on January 6th, it's our turn. It's our turn to make that choice. Look, I actually have no doubt that some people will hear my words here today and say, so what? They will insist that we're talking about the past and not the future. Actually, go look at my state Facebook page from yesterday and some of the comments, if you can stomach it. They want us to stop talking about the past. It never happened. And that's where they're wrong. We're not going to stop talking about it, because the finite mindset that led to the dark day is still the cloud that hangs over so much of our civic lives today. That finite mindset has families paying more for groceries because a president believes he has the power to unilaterally impose tariffs on everything. And Congress, whether out of acquiescence, fear, or political expediency, chooses to look the other way. That finite mindset is driving health insurance premiums through the roof as we speak, all because some in Washington believe that forcing people to choose between their health care and their homes is better than letting the other side actually get a victory or take credit. That's a finite mindset. We can see time and time again the cost when leaders forget that our democracy calls on them to always play with an infinite mindset in an infinite game. Here in Illinois, I'm really proud that we understand something fundamental about our democracy. I'm really proud to work with these folks on my right every single day. I love watching each and every one of them work. We understand that democracy is not self-executing. It requires laws that protect the right to vote. It requires institutions that respect the rule of law. And it requires leaders who are willing to defend democracy, even when it's inconvenient or even when it's unpopular. That is why in Illinois, we have taken real steps to strengthen our democratic institutions. No matter what that guy says in Washington, we have expanded access to the ballot, and we're going to protect our voting data. We have protected voters from intimidation. We have stood up for the separation of powers, and we have made it clear again and again that no one is above the law. No one. But democracy is not about strong men. It's about strong institutions. That's what democracy is about, Pastor. Strong institutions. And institutions only remain strong when people believe in them. January 6th did something very dangerous. It planted a lot of doubt. Doubt about elections, doubt about truth, doubt about whether democracy is even worth defending. Some people really believe it's not worth defending. And that doubt did not disappear when the Capitol was cleared. It lingered, it spread, and in some corners, it nurtured and was weaponized. That is why 5 years later, we cannot afford complacency. Democracy does not collapse all at once. It erodes slowly when lies go unchallenged, when norms are ignored, and when people stop believing that their voices matter. And here is the very hard truth that we all must confront. The greatest threat to democracy is not just violence. The greatest threat to democracy is not just violence. It's indifference. It's indifference. I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. People need to go vote. Donald Trump got elected by the lowest margin in presidential history in 2024 because people did not go vote. The greatest threat to democracy is not just violence. It is indifference. It is the belief that what happened on January 6th was just politics. It is the belief that democracy will somehow take care of itself. It is the belief that the infinite game can be paused or ignored. The infinite game does not wait. Let me tell you all that. Infinite game does not wait. If we stop playing, someone else is going to keep playing. Keep that in mind. So what does it mean practically to commit ourselves to the infinite game to preserve our democracy? I got four things that I'm going to suggest to you, and then I'll take my seat, Dan. Four things. First, it means telling the truth, especially when the truth is uncomfortable. That's a clap point. And here's the truth. January 6th was wrong. It was illegal. And it was incited by a sitting president who refused to accept the results of an election and who believed that if he could not control the institutions of our government, he would just tear them down. That's the truth. That is not partisan. That is factual. Ask Gronk, who started the insurrection? And Gronk should say, Donald Trump. Democracy requires a shared commitment to the truth, because without truth, there can be no trust. And without trust, democracy collapses. That was just my first point. Second, playing the infinite game means strengthening guardrails, not tearing them down. We need to allow our courts to be the courts. We need to have free and fair elections. We need to respect a free press. We need to allow 60 Minutes to run their stories. We need an independent legislature that is a check on the executive branch when necessary. We have a House. We have a Senate. We have a governor. We all are a check on each other when necessary. These are not obstacles to power. They are the very things that make democracy possible. In Illinois, we believe that disagreement is healthy, but destabilization is not. We can argue fiercely and still respect the rules. We can lose elections and still respect the outcome. And we can demand change without burning the system to the ground. We might pass a law, and the Supreme Court might say, you guys got it wrong. They've done that. Justice Cunningham is still my friend. I'm not trying to burn her down. We respect our institutions. That is the mature thing to do. That's what mature democracies do. That was my second point. Third, there's a couple Baptist preachers in here. They know what I'm doing. Third, playing the infinite game means investing in the next generation. Investing in the next generation. Democracy cannot survive if young people believe it has nothing to offer them. I've been doing these town hall meetings and barbershop conversations and going around talking to people. And why should I vote? It doesn't matter. We have to make sure they understand that it does. What do we have to offer them? That means we have to offer them civic education. That means we have to offer them real economic opportunity. That means showing through our actions, not just words, that government can still be a force for good in people's lives. People will doubt what you say, but they believe what you do. When democracy delivers, people defend it. Let me repeat that. When democracy delivers, people will defend it. When people feel like they're paying a reasonable amount for their homes, healthcare, and groceries, people will defend democracy. When they feel like politicians understand their everyday struggles, people will defend democracy. And when people feel as if they're being rightly represented and the institutions of government are actually protecting them, you know what they're going to do? They're going to defend democracy. They will defend it. We have to give them reason to defend it. Fourth and finally, I'm closing. Playing the infinite game means leadership. It means leadership. Not leadership that seeks attention, but leadership that seeks stability. Not leadership that inflames 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning on social media, intentionally inflaming, but leadership that reassures. Not leadership that asks, how do I win? But leadership that asks, how do we endure? How do we endure, Alderman Curtis? How do we endure? 5 years ago, we saw what happens when leaders abandon that responsibility. Today, in this room, we must recommit to that. Because democracy is not guaranteed. It's not. It is not inherited permanently. It is not. It is borrowed from the future, and we are responsible for returning it stronger than how we found it. That's the infinite game. And let me be clear. The goal is not to defeat one person or one movement. We don't want to get rid of this president and have another one just like him. The goal is to ensure that 20 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, Americans are still arguing passionately, but peacefully. Let them argue, but peacefully. They should be able to do that about the future of this country and the direction we should head in. That's what democracy is. The goal is to make sure that no matter who wins an election, the system itself wins. 5 years after January 6th, the question before us is simple. Will we learn from that moment, or will we repeat it? Will we treat democracy as a tool to be used, or promise to be kept? Here in Chicago, here in Illinois, here at the City Club, Dan, let us choose the infinite game. Let us choose courage over fear, truth over lies, democracy over chaos. Because if we keep playing, if we keep believing, democracy will endure for generations and generations to come. Thank you all for allowing me to see you.
If you would take a seat, and I'm going to step over here. I'll try to give you guys a better view here. I'm sorry, that works for some, not all. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm already rearranging some questions in my... Do you want to start with the difficult or easy?
I'll let you handle it.
All right, then let's talk
about
the Bears.
Something tells me you're a pro at this.
We'll talk about the Bears. How about there? We'll start there. Since you mentioned the Bears, we're talking games.
Finite game, remember that.
We're going to get specific, though. We have the Sports Commission here. We have two Chicago. We have labor unions. We've got Clayco and FH Passion, all these builders, elected officials. I think everybody has one question on their mind. And that's it. Are the Bears going to go to the Super Bowl?
Well, I think after they beat the Packers on Saturday night, we're certainly headed in that direction.
Yeah. Okay. That was the difficult one.
But I got to tell you, man, they need a better defense than what we've seen the last 2 weeks.
We'll put you in. Although coaching is doing okay. That was a difficult one. The easy one is... Are we going to see the Bears stay in Chicago and in Illinois? And what are you doing about that, and where do you fit into that? You and your colleagues fit into that conversation.
I mean, listen, you know, the Bears are an iconic franchise in the NFL. They're an iconic institution in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois. We're all Bears fans in here, right? Yeah. We're all Bears fans.
I mean, good thing we're not talking baseball.
Right. It'll divide the room real fast. There's even a few Cardinals fans in here. But I got to tell you, and this is not to be insensitive to the Bears and their ownership, but when these folks are out knocking on doors right now, they're hearing people talk about the cost of prescription drugs, about the premiums of their health care insurance going up, grocery prices, rent. They're talking about things related to cost of living. I don't know anyone that has knocked on a door and someone has said anything about the Chicago Bears. And I think we have to stay focused on the things that people care about right now. And when folks say, what's your priorities going into the legislative session? We're trying to bring down the cost of living. And talking about a brand new Bears stadium, when this one's not even 25 years old, that's insensitive to what real people are going through right now.
Glad we got that out of the way. But I had to ask it. People care about safety, right? And I think that's probably top of the list or on the top of the list when people are knocking on doors and talking to folks like you. You put a lot of effort into the Safety Act a few years ago, and there have been some amendments, I know. We've talked here at City Club about, even recently, someone mentioned rewriting it. Where do we stand with the Safety Act now, and do you support any of those efforts to amend or look back and change it a bit to see what's working and make it work better?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Dan. And I'll tell you, the Safety Act has been in the news a lot lately. A little known fact that a lot of people don't remember. January 13th, 2021, a week after the insurrection, my life changed overnight. You know, I never thought I would be Speaker of the House. But that day, Donald Trump was impeached a second time during his second term. And the last thing that passed the Illinois House before I was elected Speaker was the Safety Act. And that didn't happen overnight. That happened because a lot of hard work that went into it by a lot of members of the House that worked for months, particularly after the death of the murder of George Floyd. Policymakers from all over the state were involved in that. And I believe the Safety Act is another example of playing the infinite game. The policy behind the Safety Act is really good. The Safety Act is working. And all I got to do is point to, I'm sure you guys saw on the Sun-Times cover a couple of days ago, the front page said violence is down to its lowest level since the 60s in Chicago. One of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons for that is the Safety Act. Talk to judges, talk to police officers. They will tell you that the bad guys are in jail because judges are locking them up. The Safety Act is allowing judges to do their job. Now, do I think there's some things out there that we need to probably take a look at and see if there's things we can do better? If you're playing an infinite game, you're going to always try to find ways to do better. And, you know, I think the new chief judge of Cook County, Judge Charlie Beach, who's only been there a month, he said he's going to take a look at some things and by the end of January maybe have some recommendations. I think we should give him an opportunity to come to us and make some recommendations to us. We should have our public safety working group that we have in the House probably listen to some other folks from across the state and get their input. This law's been in effect now for a couple of years. Let's look at the data. Are there some things that we can do and do better? But let's be clear. The Safety Act is good policy and it's working. and there may be some things that we can do to improve it.
Great. We could go deep on any of these, but I will leave that there. And that's a couple years in the making. Transit is we're a little bit on the early end right now, mm-hmm. correct? And we're going to hear about that tomorrow. In fact, your committee chair, Evadina Delgado, and a few others are going to speak to that here on the stage tomorrow. I think it was Paul Ruffin had a specific question, but could we talk? He asked specifically, what do you see as the future of public mass transit in the Chicagoland area on the other side of the new bill that will come to fruition on this June? And I imagine in 2 years we'll come back and ask you how do we tweak that a bit. But let's start now where we stand.
Well,
transit.
I'm going to allow the main answers to that question to happen tomorrow because I want all of you to return to listen.
It's already sold out. Sorry, folks.
to Evadina and the folks around this transit space because they did a remarkable job. I mean, just a remarkable job. I'm just so proud of the work that Evadina and Cam and the House Transit Working Group did in conjunction with Nora from the CTA and Kirk from the RTA and labor and advocates. I mean, this county board president, I think she called me every day to make sure we didn't leave town without getting it done. I think I would have been afraid to enter into Cook County if we didn't get it done. But it really did. It was, man. Again, another example of the infinite game. I'm going to stick with that theme today because this is transformative. And if you're here tomorrow, you're going to really just be quite impressed with how transformative this law will be. Now, I do want to say it doesn't take effect till June 1st. Kirk's going to start sending money by November. You know, let's keep that in mind. But we're already seeing impacts just from the fact that a law has been passed and signed. People know that there's going to be stability. They know that there's going to be funding. There's a lot of things that you're able to do now because of the certainty of having this historic piece of legislation passed, and I'm really proud of it. But make sure you come back tomorrow to hear more.
What's next on the priority list, assuming that continues? You've tackled the Safety Act, you've tackled and are tackling transit. What do you see as the next big, beautiful or not, bill or movement?
I think everything's going to come down around affordability issues. I think folks are concerned about their homeowner's insurance, their car insurance. Anybody happy about their car insurance? Mike, you happy with your car insurance? You know, everything's about affordability, and that's going to be our focus. This transit thing's about affordability. Having people having the ability to get back and forth to work was really important for us, and that's been our focus, and that's going to continue to be our focus. And we left some things on the table, particularly around the insurance issues. Of course, our budget is always going to be a top priority, and how we manage that budget is going to be extremely important in light of what's coming out of Washington and the chaos that's being created. I think we woke up to headlines today that, yet again, the president is hurting poor people by shutting off funds just to 5 blue states, particularly temporary assistance for needy families, the people who need it the most, where government is expected to step up the most. He's shutting off funding. We're going to have to stand in the gaps and try to figure out ways to address that. And I got to tell you, I wake up every day saying, thank God I live in Illinois. Because states have rights. States can push back. We are the ones that are leading and protecting on democracy right now. And this is a perfect example of where we will do that.
With that in mind, you talked a little bit about leadership a few minutes ago. You've gotten deeper into it in previous visits here. You sit, even your seat at the House when you're there, you see a lot of leaders. You see a lot of next generation. And it's not just in the state. It's in the city, the county. What do you see as the future? Are you encouraged by the future generation of leaders in this state? And feel free to drop some names along the way. You know, really, who should we be watching? Who should we
What? You got past this torch, right, after a long speakership and a whole lot of folks that retired, left over the years for different reasons. And I think everyone realized we're going to be doing that again sooner than later.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you to go anywhere.
Yeah.
But who's that next generation of leaders from your perspective? And you don't have to go specific into names, but tell us about your view from your perspective on the future of this state.
I think the future of Illinois is very bright. And I'll tell you why. I want the House members to all stand up.
Right.
House members, stand up. Kelly Cassidy, Teresa Mond, Jay Hoffman, Robin Gable, Bob Morgan, Maurice West, Nick Smith, Dagmar Avalon, Evadina Delgado, LaShawn Ford, Bob Rita, Curtis Tarver, Ann Williams, Kim DuBouclay. The bench is deep. Lindsay LaPointe. Who's that back there? Mary Beth Canty. Any other House members here?
Woo! Here.
Kelly Cassidy. All right.
All right, so
did I get that one right?
Oh, sure. In spirit of bipartisanship, how about
any Republican
leadership?
Here? Any Republicans here? There's some good Republicans.
How are you guys doing with that, with the downstate?
You got surprised I said that?
Yeah. How about crossing? Is it more difficult to manage your own caucus or the Republican Democratic dynamic in the House?
The House I lead is very different than the House the former Speaker led. Politics is just different. And our caucus, the House Democratic Caucus, probably has 11 sub-caucuses, the last I count. Might have more today. But at the end of the day, I remind them that there's only one caucus that has 60 votes to pass anything, and that's the House Democratic Caucus. Diversity is our strength, but our power comes from our unity. In getting to that unity, you got to have a lot of process in place. And I get a lot of criticism for it. I don't care. The 60 Democrat rule in the House has helped us get a lot of big things done. And if you can get 60 of these Democrats on the same page, trust me, you're going to pick up some Republican votes too, quite a few of them, because that's how diverse we are. And we come from different areas of the state, different communities, different cultural backgrounds. Got to make you work a little bit. If you can get to 60 Democrats in this caucus, that bill is going to go on the board. And it might slow things down a little bit, but I think that just makes things better. We've landed some big pieces of legislation because of that. Initially in 2021, CEJA was a perfect result of that. The assault weapons ban that Bob carried was a great result of that. The new and modernized CEJA. I don't know what you guys are calling it, Jay, Robin.
Surgia.
What? What are we calling it?
Surgia.
That.
Look at that unified voice.
You know, all of this stuff is done because we make them work toward unity, and that's how we're getting big things done.
How about a minute on national leadership and the future of that? A little bit of maybe the Democratic Party. What do you see playing out over the next few years? You talked a lot about the current administration and democracy. What do we see happening there over the next year or two?
Yeah. You know, I have to believe what I'm seeing, going on here in Illinois and playing out in other areas of the state, what we saw last November, the winds are changing. But I think Democrats have to continue standing up, speaking up, and fighting back, and calling out the lies, speaking truth to power. We have to continue to if we're going to be the choice of voters, we have to make sure they know that we're their voice. And I got to tell you, what we just saw this past weekend, everyone knows the president of Venezuela was a tyrant and should have been removed a long time ago. But what this room should be concerned about, particularly on this day, is the president of the United States' blatant disrespect of the Constitution. Congress not saying a word about it, acquiescing yet again, their constitutional responsibility. We have to speak up and protect the Constitution at all costs if we're going to protect our democracy. And what we saw happen in Venezuela over the weekend was a violation of our Constitution. And I think Democrats, whoever the next leader is going to be, needs to be out there speaking up, standing up against that and speaking up for our Constitution.
So you'll tell us that the Bears are going to win the Super Bowl, but you're not going to tell us who the next president's going to be. Is that what I'm hearing?
You got to go through a primary system. We need everyone to go vote.
Let's stick with Venezuela for just a second. Can we talk about the local effect that might be coming? I mean, I think we're all kind of watching what happened and understanding. Everyone goes, what's your view? And I said, I'm still formulating that myself.
Yeah.
It's all still happening. What's going to affect it? If you remember, a lot of the migrants that were coming to Chicago were coming from Venezuela. Is that going to be a big factor here? What's going to affect the state of Illinois and Chicago because of what's going on in Venezuela?
Well, I think it's bigger than just Venezuela. I think Venezuela is an example of the larger problem. We have a president who's just totally out of control. Right after that, he threatened Greenland. He threatened Mexico. He threatened the United Kingdom. Is there anyone he didn't threaten? Cuba. I mean, the instability that all of this is going to cause is going to just continue to wreak havoc here in the United States. Our affordability crisis isn't getting better under this type of leadership. It's getting worse. Rather than focus on the things that he should be focusing on right here, he's causing chaos around the world. And that's going to impact Illinois, whether you want to believe it or not. And that's why we need people out there standing up and speaking up about it.
Okay. I have time for two more. So, David Greising, I'm able to get to your question from the BGA.
Yes, we'd like transparency with our website. Is he here?
He sure is. David, is he in the way back? That's not intentional. Oh, here he is. There he is. David stopped me on the way and said, can you ask him about pensions? Ooh. That's the question. We talk about affordability. You know the issue with pensions. Where are we able to address any of that in this next session or the next couple of sessions?
David, thanks for the question. And honestly, first of all, let me say I'm impressed with the work that we have done under the leadership of the governor and Don and myself. The credit upgrades that we've received, we're proud of that. We're proud of the work that we've done collectively to get the state out of the mess that we inherited after the previous administration. But there's more work to do. We know that. And there's a lot of folks in this room that will tell you that Illinois has a revenue problem. You know, some will disagree with that passionately. And we're allowed to do that. But some believe we have a revenue problem. And, you know, quite honestly, to solve a lot of the issues that we're going to have to address over the years, we're going to have to honestly address that revenue question. And I have said this in every town hall meeting I've had, so I'm not breaking news, that I believe we should tax rich people. We should tax millionaires, very similar to the way they do it in Massachusetts, a surcharge tax. We tested that twice on a ballot, and people support surcharge taxes on millionaires. We know we have a revenue problem, and if we had more revenue, and that's one way to do it, you can address pensions. But I think we should have these discussions.
And your first point that you made, and I can't read my writing, but just telling the truth, right, even if it's uncomfortable. We have a revenue problem. Illinois is not number one on a whole lot of lists because of some of the finances. It's just true. There's been corruption in state government over many years. There's been significant financial difficulties. Yet we are successful, especially lately, and Christy and others can talk to this, about attracting different businesses. Give us some encouraging thoughts, perhaps, about the future of the state from an economic standpoint. Why should, I don't know, AI and quantum and some of these other companies who are starting to rise to the top, why should they come to Illinois?
Illinois is the best big city in America. How many years in a row?
9 years
in a row. You know, Illinois is in the middle of everything. You know, our university system is one of the best in the country, if not the world. And I will tell you, as part of my visits around the state this summer and fall, I've visited Fortune 500 companies, and they say our workforce is second to none. You know, and we're investing in that workforce. And that's why what you've seen under the leadership of our governor and the Senate president and myself these last several years, it's not an accident. Companies that are investing in our state. What's going on with the Illinois Economic Development Corporation under Christy George and John Atkinson? We're all working together. We're all pulling in the same direction. Yes, we still have differences, but we come together a lot. We take trips across the globe to attract businesses, and we're being very successful. And make no mistake about it, we're just getting started. There's a lot more to do. Illinois is on the rise, and I'm really proud to be a part of that.
Well, let's you're proud to be a part of it. We're just getting started. You talk a lot about democracy. You talk about a lot about leadership. One of our favorite City Club questions. When you were here back in 22, I think you stood up and said, I can't believe I'm here. You know, you had sat in that audience for so many years, and here you are, a speaker. Could you imagine yourself in the Oval Office?
No. Well, this is the second longest list.
You were correct. I did add the according to him caveat.
That might be a sign. You know? I don't want to be.
You heard it here at City Club, folks. You are an inspiring speaker, as I said. But I understand what's behind that, and you always talk about your why and what's your why. I think we heard a bit about that today. And it's been an honor of mine to be able to sit here and ask some of these questions of a man of your stature and all the amazing things you've done. As you all know, we're nonpartisan, not biased here at City Club, but we very much appreciate public service. And there's so many public servants in this room and so many leaders, as you all know, not just in the public sector, in the private sector as well. But here we are with one of the greats in our state, and it's been an honor, really, to have him here at City Club. Thank you all for joining us. For Speaker Welch, come back soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.